Yeah, my name's Brad Taylor. I think I describe myself as an artist educator.
I hardly even want to, I don't know whether to talk about your work in terms of ceramics.
I think I'm kind of an outlier in terms of ceramics. A lot of times people don't know what it is. They you know, oftentimes somebody won't know what it's made out of.
What is it?
Because it isn't necessarily recognizable.
Right.
To everyone as being ceramics.
So what is it?
Well, it is clay. It is ceramic. It is the work that you saw is fired.
Right, but there's other stuff in there, right?
Well, the other stuff is essentially gone. So
it's burned out.
Yeah, so I use organic matter that's used with the clay, and it creates voids, and it's stranded organic material. So I'm always looking for stranded organic material. Maybe one of my favorites is actually rice straw. So when I go work in Asia, it's like if I'm in a place where I can access the farm communities, then I'll use rice straw in my work oftentimes because it's long, it's linear. The seeds have been removed, so I'm left with just the grass part. I wish there was still rice here.
You're really well versed on these organic materials, but still, I also found this piece super witty for some reason. I don't know why. Like, it looks like something. It's referring to something.
It's kind of like a small mattress or pillow. Maybe if I talk about how it's made, then I can sort of get at like how it relates to the others. So that particular piece is, it's also tubes of clay, which is essentially what the other ones are also. They're essentially tubes of clay. So that's made of tubes of clay. It's just that they're larger. So they're made with an extruder. And so, I don't know, maybe they'd be an inch and a half in diameter and, you know, 2.5 feet long, 2 feet long. Whatever that is, and then they're stacked up in at right angles to each other. So then they're layered up. So it's sort of like a layer cake of these things. And then that layer cake is then compressed and pounded so that it becomes more dense. So it's essentially compressed together. And that compression thing is something that I oftentimes do with my work. I think a lot of times you'll see the titles of those things will reference the ways in which things were made or maybe the processes. So it might be mass compressed and rolled or mass compressed, rolled, and bound.
I mean, I think it's just so resonant that you've got this show going with Lee Wai-Yi there at the
I went and saw that show a couple of weeks ago.
There's terrific resonance.
Yeah. Kate Lingley, the chair of our department, was actually like, oh, you've got to go see this show.
Mm-hmm. It's really great to have the two going
on. I went down
and
saw it a couple of weeks ago, and it's a really beautiful show. And so, I mean, I don't know. I think maybe the things we look at and maybe our sense of tactility, maybe we have some parallels or some things in common.
Yeah, it's that feeling of monumentality mm-hmm. and still a little evanescence, you know, both of those things. The largest work in the gallery is probably the most like earlier things of yours that I saw mm-hmm. on large gallery installations. They were porcelain, though.
Yeah, I think what I'm known for is I'm known for larger scale work. Sometimes it's architectural. I've made the smaller scale work throughout my career, but it isn't that. That's not the work that I've received recognition for. I grew up in the Western U.S. and I spent a lot of time hiking. And I have a like all kids, I picked up rocks and sticks and dragged them home and all that kind of stuff. And then I started to pick up bones, and I started to pick up animal skulls. So I have a collection of animal skulls from hiking as a kid on through, you know, young adulthood. And there's quite a few of them. So it ends up numbering in the hundreds of skulls at this point that I've collected over the years. Mm-hmm. And they range from deer to cattle to horses to moose to, I have a bighorn sheep, to small things like small birds or cats or dogs or coyotes or beaver, like all that kind of thing.
How do you keep them?
You know, the sun in the western U.S. just bleaches them. And so the bugs take care of any flesh, and generally by the time I found it, it's well on its way to being cleaned up. Mm. And so I'll pick up these bleached bones and drag them home. And then at some point I started to make ceramics based on those bones. And I started to try to emulate these skulls that I was collecting. And just before I went to graduate school, I had a friend that was, my wife and I were doing arts festivals for a living. So we were making pottery and selling it at arts festivals.
What kind of pottery?
Like hand-built pottery. I would say she always called it decorative functional ware. So it's sort of like really frilly champagne flutes and things like that. And she designed it and I was helping her make it. At a certain point, we made some things where I had a large part in the design also. Those things were a little more bulky or sort of wild colors and push and pull and a lot less picky. And we had this friend that would stay with us for arts festivals. Her name was June. So June Rettig, her and some of her friends would stay at our house when they came to town to do the local arts festival. And so she was a shoemaker, so she made shoes. And so she'd show up and there'd be all these skulls and all these bones around. And so one of her trips to Salt Lake, she brought a whale rib to me. So she brought the rib of a whale and it was broken and really weathered and peeling. It was this really beautiful thing. And it was just before I went to graduate school. So she leaves me with this bone and, she goes back to Arizona where she lives. And in a little bit after that, I went off to graduate school and I thought, I really need to take that bone with me. I'm really interested in that whale rib. So I left things out of my car like pots and pans and clothing to get this whale rib in. So the whale rib drove across the country with me from Salt Lake City to New York to go to grad school, upstate New York.
How big was it?
Oh, maybe 4.5 to 5 feet long.
Oh.
And not that big in diameter,
okay.
2 inches thick, 1.5 inches thick by, 5 inches in width, something like that. But sort of this long, skinny art thing. But I started to try to emulate this thing and try to make it, and I couldn't do it. It's like everything I made was fake. This bone was really beautiful, and everything I made was just sort of this bad rendition of this thing that I was trying to figure out why it was so beautiful. And at some point in there, I started to add things to my clay to try to emulate the texture, and I started to build things from the inside out rather than the outside in. I think most artists with clay work from the outside in.
I mean, thinking they work how they on the want surface. It to look.
Yeah, they work on the surface.
So
or they'll make something and then they'll apply something to the surface to have it look like they want it to look. And so that whale rib things grow that way. And they grow that way from the inside out, not from the outside in.
So how did you think? What goes
so
on
I started
the inside?
I started to make things where I was trying to emulate those textures and those structures that were in this bone. And the things that I made, which were about the texture and the structure, which were built from the inside out, they had the same kind of feeling that bone had to me. They didn't look like the bone. They looked like other things primarily. But they were a direct response to it. And I think that they were more like the bone than anything that I could make trying to copy the bone. So it was something about this essential element that was in this object that I was obsessed by that allowed me to start to figure out what was crucial about that thing and what fascinated me about it. So as I started to build these pieces from the inside out, and that's when I started to add organic material to the clay to be able to do that.
Wait a minute. To build it from the inside out.
Well, so I would take some clay and I would smear it on some grass, and then I would take a slab of regular clay and I would layer that in there and attach it to it, and then I would take some more organic material and lay it in, and then I would lay more like really soft clay over that to encapsulate all those things. And then when I'd fire them, the organic stuff would burn away, and then I could sandblast or carve or break these objects to get back to what was inside. And that tactility that was on the inside was the core of what they were about to me. It's the core of what I was interested in, those structures. And so those structures, and it kind of led from like trying to emulate this whale rib, and it's sort of like, oh, these things are sort of like geologic strata, so they're kind of like rock. I always love rocks, so I spent a long time just making strata. So I'd make layers and layers of clay that had different kinds of tactility, and I'd compress them in different ways and fire them to release the tensions and try to figure out how to make these things as much like rock as I possibly could. So it's almost like taking clay and I think about it like returning most of the ceramic materials that we use. They're essentially pulverized rock of various types that we mix together, and then we fire them and we turn them back into another kind of rock that may be similar to the original rock, or depending on the mixture, it may be very different than the original rock. But essentially we're making rocks out of pulverized rock. And so I layer these things up, and then at some point I started to reorganize these things by folding them or by rolling them and compressing them. And that's where when you walk in the gallery on the right side, I call it entropic mass. There's a larger piece on a steel table that is kind of like splaying open, and it's like kind of reddish brown and black. And there's all of this tactility and texture in it, but there's also organization in terms of that spiral where this slab was made, or this strata was made, and then it was rolled and compressed into this mass, and then it was fired until the point where it fell apart. And then I kept firing to the point where it started to come back together again, where it's starting to melt back together again. So it's kind of like taking things apart and putting them together, and taking them apart and putting them together in different ways.
Yeah. Pressure, heat, I mean, they're like geologic forces.
Right. You know, and I think a lot about geologic forces.
I bet.
I try to emulate them sometimes in the kiln, and I've never been able to figure out how to actually truly do it, because it's like in the time frame and the pressures that are accessible to somebody like me, I can't do it. I can't actually put things under that kind of weight and pressure.
For eons.
Yeah, right. And those kinds of timescales are outside of the realm of possible for us. We can't do it. We can think about it, and we can try to make things which reference it.
Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, maybe. I think there's some of that in there. I think I don't like to tell people specifically what I want them to think or what it's about. I think what I like to do is I like to think that there are a lot of things that it's about, and I think that those things all coexist on different levels of consciousness. And sometimes I can make things where all have a specific, you know, thought or process in mind. And it's okay with me if somebody references that or thinks that, but it's also okay with me if they don't, and that they think something else that's either, you know, at a right angle or divergent from that, or maybe it crosses over at some point. So I think those are more interesting conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they can bring their experience to an object and react to what it is that's in front of them, and I can bring my experience to it, and we have different experiences. And, you know, some of the same thoughts might cross our minds, but there's going to be some different ones also.
Do you think about what you're saying with especially those large pieces?
Well, a lot of it is about phenomenology and a relationship with material and process. So that's there. There's also a relationship. There's always a relationship, I think, to like body and object, especially the bigger work, because it's really physical to make it. So it's, I mean, your body knows it when you make work at that kind of weight.
How heavy are they?
The big one in the center of the gallery, the four-section piece, they're somewhere between 1,000 and 1,500 pounds a section. I don't really know exactly because I don't have a scale to weigh them on up there. I'll know when I ship them someday.
Yeah. They were made here?
Yeah, they were made here.
Here at UH?
Yeah. Almost everything in the exhibition was made this year.
Oh, really? With different kinds of plant material from here or from all over?
You know, there's some grass. There's also some just animal feed, some straw and some hay and things that are mixed in with those pieces. Sometimes here I like to work with I'll go out and collect the ironwood needles. I kind of wimped out on the big piece thinking about collecting that many ironwood needles.
What'd you use for the big piece?
That's actually, most of it is straw and grass. Yeah.
It looks like a giant upwelling.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I think that I really like the tactility of it, and I like that it's solid, and I like that it, when I fired it, I didn't know how hot I was going to go, so I didn't decide what temperature I was going to fire it to. I put it in the kiln so that I try to put things in the kiln so I can see them, so that I can have some kind of a connection to what it's doing. And then most times I fire until things are at their breaking point.
So yeah, that piece, red hot and practically that piece, wilting.
Well, that piece was wilting. That piece was starting to move. Mm-hmm. In the kiln. So there are a couple of those sections you can see that they're not, they were straight and they're not straight anymore. So it's essentially starting to crush itself under the heat and the weight. So I think that the subject matter of the piece is maybe, you know, it's maybe buried in that process somewhat. And I think that that's the phenomenological part of it. So I love interacting with things that way. And a viewer can maybe have a sense of that in terms of what the object is afterwards. It's a little like archaeology maybe. So like you look at something and then you can start to decipher how it maybe came into being.